Meow, meow. Meow, meow.
And this is Freedom Fiends, weekend edition, hour one of the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from the Wormabago Mobile Studios in the depths of Bootleg Bayou, where the swamp meets the sea and revenuers dare not tread. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPOC no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. You can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. My name is Ben Stone. With me is Chandler St. Pierre. By way of Fiend Phone Technology, bouncing off satellites through tin cans off of barbed wire fences. How you doing, Chandler?
Woohoo. I'm doing awesome, Ben. And we're issuing an official trigger warning because we forgot to do it right at the start. So you people have your trigger warning. Be warned.
You know, I guess it's been we try not to do a lot of news on the weekend show because, you know, there's already news that's happening at the hour on the radio, and there's news everywhere, and you hear news all week. It's like if you drive back and forth to work and you have the radio on, you're going to hear news. If you come home in the evening and you sit down and you try to relax and the television's on, you're going to hear news. They just throw that crap at you constantly. So we try on the weekend Freedom Fiends to not really, you know, focus on news and just try. Well, our kind of the thing that we always remind each other is that we're dealing with concepts, not news. And yet, when we see the volatility in the market and people screaming and people upset, and we watch the Chinese market doing its dance, and we watch all kinds of crazy stuff going on with Bitcoin and the price of gold and the price of silver, and we see what's going on in Wall Street and what's going on in Europe and what's going on, you know, it's really hard to not bring up at least some of it and say, well, actually, I'll just jump to the quote that I have. I read this to Chandler right before we started. This comes from Heinz Guderian. He was the German officer who, one of the primary developers of the Blitzkrieg in the 1930s, of that military movement. And he said, and he may have been quoting somebody else, but he said, there are no desperate situations. There are only desperate people. And his point there is that if you are prepared ahead for a situation, and if you keep your mind clear and solid, and you're in control of your emotions and you're in control of your thoughts, it doesn't matter how bad the situation is. With the slightest amount of preparation and to keep yourself in check and to keep your emotions in check, you can always find a way to get through a situation. It doesn't matter how bleak or how dark things seem. It doesn't matter how bad things are. You know, going back to quoting Ross Ulbricht, talking to his mother from jail, and Ross kept telling his mother, trying to assure her that, well, there's life, there's hope. And that really is important. It's important to understand that when it seems like the world's falling apart around you, that if you can just keep control of yourself, keep your head straight, look around for options. You know, it's kind of like I used to, when I was young and rubbery and all flexible and everything like kids are, I used to do a lot of surfing, or at least I tried to surf a lot. I crashed more than I surfed. But one of the things about surfing, especially in California, is you have to be prepared for changes to take place. Pretty much anything can happen. A wave can shift. Somebody can pop up especially in the beaches in California, because there's so many people. A head can pop up right in front of you. You got to be ready to dodge to the side. You can suddenly, you know, lose your balance and end up in rocks. And the thing, even though I haven't even tried to surf for years and years and years, but the thing you have to constantly be ready for is change when you're trying to surf. And, you know, and life is really like that. Life is full of a series of unpredictable events, and there's no possible way that you can be prepared for everything. But if you take a little bit of effort and mostly prepare your mind and a few other efforts as well, you can pretty much get through almost anything that life throws at you.
Yeah, totally. Like, I know on my old podcast that I used to do, that was one of the things we stressed a lot, We are always talking about the coming financial collapse. I guess they've kicked that can down the road quite a ways, but you know, whatever. It'll happen eventually, right? Because the fiat currency system, the debt-based currency system, constant consumerism, you know, that stuff can't sustain indefinitely. So, you know, one of the things that I always said was, you have to learn to adapt, right? If you're rigid in your thoughts and your routines and your habits, like I used to work, I still do, folks with autism, Asperger's, stuff like that. And it's really hard for those folks to adapt their routine, to adapt to situations that may change, right? So you got to learn from that, and you have to be able to do that. And like you said, you have to mentally prepare. That's like half the battle right there, okay? So if you don't have, like, you know, MREs stocked up in your basement, and you don't have, like, you know, tons of boxes of ammo, well, whatever. I mean, it'd be nice to have that stuff in an emergency situation. But if you have the mindset that, you know, some really bad things are going to happen, and you're going to have to change your mode of thinking, the way you maneuver yourself, you know, learn to evaluate your surroundings on the fly. If you can at least train your mind to do that, you'll be okay. You know, I mean, I have a friend who called me up the other night, and you know, she's kind of where I was like four years ago, you know, going down the YouTube rabbit holes of New World Order and, you know, financial collapse and martial law and all that stuff. And it's some scary stuff, right? You know, you get down that track, and she's like, I'm so freaked out. I can't stop watching it, but I should, because it's freaking me out. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm sure there's, with everything, there's an element of truth to all that stuff, but a lot of that stuff is embellished. It's used to keep people in a constant state of fear so they can't focus and concentrate. But I said, you know, think about it. Whatever happens, you know, some really bad things come down the pike. The military imposes martial law or something. I don't know. I don't see it, but let's just say it happens, right? You know, Your concern is going to be shifted from, oh, gee, am I going to make it in home, you know, make it home tonight to watch, you know, Fear the Walking Dead, or, oh, my internet's down, I can't, you know, download the latest podcast. Those concerns are going to shift to, I wonder what I'm eating tonight. I wonder if anyone's going to try to break into my home. And your world becomes so much simpler, right? Everything becomes simplified. And you start evaluating your situation on the fly. And I think a lot of people will be able to do that. Not all. You know, there are some people that are just not grounded in reality. I think the people in the urban areas that aren't used to thinking like that, they would have a much more difficult time. But I know where you are down in the south, in the rural areas, and, you know, me up here in the northeast and in the rural areas, I don't think it's that much of a transition, right? You know, for us up north here, we get a bad snowstorm or a bad ice storm, we have to think like that anyway, because the power goes out, you know, the lights are out, the roads are down, you can't travel on them, you know, no cell phone reception. You're like, how am I going to deal with this for the next 3 days? This kind of sucks. You know, and you do, you know, you load the wood stove up, you break into the canned goods, you walk down the street to your neighbor, see if they need any help with anything, you know, if you can help them, if they can help you, that sort of thing. And, like, you know, if the world comes to an end and all this, the apocalyptic stuff that everyone's talking about with the financial markets and you know, currency wars and whatever, it's all a possibility. But I think that good, decent people are going to cooperate and work together to their own mutual self-interest. And I think that's what will be some big try. Like, it's few and far between, you know?
Yeah, because that's what people do. I mean, humans have survived through amazing turmoil at times, and some of it caused by government, some of it caused by economy, some of it caused by weather, some of it caused by just, you know, life and disease and things that happen, stuff. And humans just plod on through it. We just push on through, and we survive because we're survivors. You know, that's the other things have come and gone, and we're still here. You know, It's kind of like that thing that Ernie Hancock has on his show, where there's that speech from the very dramatic speech from The Matrix, where the guy says, after 100 years of fighting these robots, there's one thing, we're still here. Well, yeah, we're still here. It's not just 100 years. It's a really unimaginable amount of time that humans have been playing this game, and we're still here. You know, so yeah, so if your computer goes out and you can't see what's on the news, and there's a giant, you know, coronal mass ejection hits the earth and fries all transistors of every kind, that's going to be inconvenient. And there will be people, I think, mostly within the cities that don't know how to survive for themselves anyway, and things will probably get pretty ugly. But that's why I don't live in the cities. Well, that's one reason why. That's one of many reasons why.
Yeah.
But I don't live in the cities just for reasons like that. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be in the cities in any kind of giant major catastrophe like that. But, you know, I was talking to
some... Well, there's a good mental...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Ben.
I was going to say, I was talking to some people back a month ago or 2 months ago, whenever it was, when the Greek crisis, money crisis was happening, and Greek banks were, you know, taking people's savings and people couldn't withdraw their money out of the banks, and there was a giant panic in Greece. I was talking to one of the people in a local shop down here in southern Alabama, and I said, you know, did you hear what's going on in Greece with the banks? And this lady had no clue. She had no interest in what was happening in Europe. And I said, well, you know, this is happening, and the ATMs don't work, and they can't get money out. And she says, well, I guess if something like that happened around here, it'd be awfully inconvenient. And that was it. I mean, to her, that's what it would be. It'd be an inconvenience. Because we're right between giant farms, and there's farm stands to the right and farm stands to the left, and there's a bay on one side that's full of fish, and there's a river on the other side that's full of fish, and there's deer that come right up into your yard at night. And she looks at it and says, well, you know, I wouldn't be able to go to the Walmart, I guess. And that's about the... You know, that's the extent of it for her, not because she sits around being paranoid about a doom. It's because her whole life is designed in such a way that she's prepared for when a hurricane comes in, or she's prepared for, you know, whatever it is that might come along. And there's no fear there.
Well, that kind of reminds me. Yeah, I remember, I think it was, I might have been reading a book by Hayek or somebody. And they were talking about the Great Depression. And the government guys went all over the country to talk to people about how they're faring in the Depression. And they went out to this farm out in the far west, and they were like, so how are you faring in this Depression? They were like, what Depression?
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Freedom Fiends. Meow. So before we went to the market, I was telling a story about these government bureaucrats that went all over the country asking people how they fared during the Great Depression. And they got to a farm out west and asked them, and the cats out there were like, what depression? What are you talking about? They had just continued to live their lives and, you know, working on their farm, engaging in commerce with their neighbors, and that hadn't really penetrated, I guess, that far west and really affected them. Now, I mean, it's different nowadays because the world is so interconnected, but I think there's a simple exercise you can do, right? You take an inventory of all the systems you depend on, or not even depend on, that you use every day. The roads, you know, like city water, sewer, electricity, you know, Hannaford, that's the local supermarket here, in case anyone's wondering. All these things, right? You take an inventory. And then, you know, you're sitting there at night just chilling or whatever, watching TV, just think to yourself, so how would I What would I do if maybe the power was out or maybe the water wasn't running for a couple of weeks? You know, we have a natural disaster, hurricane comes through, ice storm, whatever. And I can't, you know, use the water, or I can't go down to Hannaford to get some bread and milk and all that. And you kind of do this mental exercise in your head. And after a while, you come up with techniques that may work and may not, right? You probably won't know if all of them will work till you're in the situation and you try it. But at least you're preparing yourself. And I think that's the point I was trying to make in the last segment, was that preparation is, that mental preparation is at least 50% of the battle right there.
Yeah.
Because if you're prepared and ready for this stuff to happen in your brain, you're going to be okay. You might struggle. You might have a hard time finding ways around, ways around these systems that are down, but you'll make it, and you'll find like-minded individuals. You'll attract them. But if you're not prepared mentally and all this stuff happens, you're going to be like, what do you mean I can't call my friend on my cell phone? Wait, how come my email isn't working? Where's my internet? No 4G. What are you talking about? You know, you'll be freaking.
You know, I think there's a huge industry out there, in an industry of fear, that, you know, that a lot of companies and a lot of individuals that make a lot of money from terrifying people that, you know, if you don't have 6 space blankets and you don't have, you know, 26 weeks of MREs, and if you don't have this and if you don't have that, and all those things you have to buy from them, you know, or they get a cut out of it as you buy from their from the people they reference. If you don't do that, then you know, the hordes are going to come and steal all your stuff, and they're just going to eat everything, and you're just going to be helpless, and it's going to be terrible. But, you know, I think a lot of that fear is based on a misunderstanding of human nature, because I've been in some pretty bad weather-related incidences where, you know, in one situation in Ohio, in a suburb, the remnants of Hurricane Ike came through, took our roof off of our house, ripped through the neighborhood, and we were without electricity for, I think we were out 12 days, and I think my son at his house in downtown Dayton was out 14 days. Now, let me just qualify. Downtown Dayton is, for somebody who might be like in New York or Detroit or San Francisco or Los Angeles, they might think, oh, well, downtown Dayton, what a joke. Well, downtown Dayton is as much of anything you think of as an inner city as the inner city parts of the Crenshaw district in LA, or any inner city parts of Detroit, or you know, Chicago, or any other city like that. Yeah, it's not surrounded by a giant city, but the inner core of Dayton is just like the inner core of any other city like that. And here's my son, you know, 2 weeks right down there in the middle of it, no utilities, and nobody was devouring anybody else. Things stayed calm and people helped each other. Back in the suburbs where I was at, there was things going on, like, you know, the neighbors were getting together and having potlucks. They're cooking the stuff out of their freezers before it went bad. And it was almost like a giant block party. People were walking around asking people if they needed anything, kids with a wagon, with a thing, with a giant, you know, like a 5-gallon thing of water in it, making sure everybody was okay. It was just, it was people making sure that people are all right. And that's what people do.
It sure is. We'll have more of this when we come back from the market. Worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends.
So, ice storm, Chandler.
Yes, we, those of us in New England, particularly us in Maine, might remember the ice storm of 98. And actually, my mom was telling me, I guess there was a blizzard in 78 or 76, I can't remember. It was either the year before or the year after I was born. It was pretty bad, too. But I don't remember that because I was either not born or really young. But the ice storm of 98, oh my goodness, that was tough. I remember sitting, I was at work in one of the homes I worked at, and I remember sitting on the porch having a cigarette. Oh, I miss having cigarettes. And I just hear crack and then like all night long. And what it was is it was trees and power lines and you know, telephone poles were just so frozen solid and covered with ice, they were cracking and falling over. So it was really bad, right? We lost power. The roads were, I mean, you could drive on them, but it wasn't a smart thing to do because they were so icy, even with like the DOT work crews out there doing their thing. It just, it was a really nasty situation. And what did people do? Well, people, a lot of the same things you talked about in your situation, you know, people would get together and have like barbecues and dinners. And, you know, it, like I remember my dad on where he was living, they were only without power for like 4 days. And they were one of the first people in the area to get their power back. So people on that road, you know, they would get together and they'd call friends and family and say, hey, I got power. Why don't you bring some blankets over, bring your propane grills, whatever, you know, we'll do that sort of thing. I mean, long story short, people just got together, banded together. It was a really trying situation. It was really tough. A lot of people were not prepared for that. We hadn't seen anything like that. I had never seen it in my lifetime. I mean, I remember I was one of those idiots that actually went out and drove around in the ice storm with my camera. And I remember driving around taking pictures and just seeing everything covered in ice. It was like some weird scene from a movie, you know? And yeah, people were really ill prepared for it, but they survived. You know, local businesses donated a lot of goods and services. And I don't know, man, it just really showcased the goodness in humanity, which is still there. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, all that stuff comes down the pike. It'll be rough and it'll present a whole new list of challenges. But I think that folks will unite and get together and do what's right, you know, and I think that's what helps communities grow. And if you have a strong community to begin with, you know, if you know your neighbor, which a lot of people don't nowadays, right?
Right.
And if you know your neighbor, you know, maybe you know their name and you know they work at the local Safeway or whatever. That's a good opening, you know. That's a good, you know, you talk to them when you're out getting your mail, and you start making those friendships. I mean, I guess I'm kind of lucky. I don't really have neighbors where I live. I have a couple, but I don't really know them. They're all young. Well, there's one older guy. He seems really cool. But, you know, get out there and talk to people. And, I mean, you know, don't be like, hey, so when the crisis happens, what are you going to do? You know, just make a casual friendship, you know? Hey, yeah. What do you like doing? You know, what's your career? You know, what's your interests? And it goes a long way, man. I'm telling you.
And there's nothing wrong with stocking up on anything. We're not saying don't prepare. You know, Chandler,
absolutely not.
You spend the year chopping wood to have a good supply every year. And, you know,
that's just because I'm cheap.
Yeah. And I have, you know, I have a bug out bag right here in the RV with me in case something was to happen with the RV that we'd need to abandon it. I can grab that very quickly. With that, I can provide shelter. I've got a saw in there that I can cut wood with. I've got, you know, I've got all the basics. I've got a little fishing kit. I've got all the stuff that I need in that bug out bag. So I'm not saying don't be prepared. Being prepared is being smart. But like Chandler was saying in the early part here of the show, it's a matter of it's the mental gymnastics that are just as important, if not more important, than any specific item that you think you need to be prepared with. And that's really where the game is won or lost, is in your mind. And being prepared in your mind to be able to adjust to situations, to be able to, you know, face whatever realities are that are in front of you. But again, I want to take a shot.
Go ahead.
I'll come back to that.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's really interesting. Like back in my crazy survivalist days and, you know, Apocalypse Now, everything's going to hit. You know, I bought a lot of food, extra food and toilet paper and toothpaste and all the staples, right? And the end of the world didn't come, but you know what? You got to rotate all that stuff out. And when I fell on hard times a couple of years ago and had a drastic cut in my hours, guess what I had sitting in my basement?
Yeah.
Stuff I didn't have to go out and buy, you know, so that saved me quite a bit of money, actually. So, I mean, that stuff pays off, you know, even if you don't think the end of the world's coming, right? You know, it never hurts to prepare.
Well, I have a very specific story on that one. You know, I started in 2000. My eyes kind of opened to Austrian economics. I've been libertarian leaning since as early as I've been thinking about stuff like this, and activism in the 70s, and then again in the 80s, and working for the 1988 in the Ron Paul Libertarian Party candidacy. And I've been aware of a lot of this stuff for a long time. But in 2000, when the market crashed, I was also trying to learn a little bit about economics, and it punched me. The 2000 crash punched me right in the face, and I got in and I started learning about Austrian economics, and I started buying silver. And at that time, it was super cheap. So every couple weeks, I'd just drop by the coin shop and buy a couple rounds, and just it was real slow and it was real cheap, and it didn't really take a lot to do that. Well, then in 2000, early, let's see, I think I'm getting my years correct here. I think it was early 2013 or 14, 2014, when I had some real serious medical problems. And we're looking at like $20,000 in medical bills plus the cost of trying to, no, I guess it was in 2013. So like $20,000 in medical bills, the cost of trying to get to Porkfest, the cost of trying to move, you know, this giant RV around the countryside at like 6 miles to the gallon or whatever. And it just totally overwhelmed our finances. And if it hadn't been for the fact that I bought a good portion of silver back when it was like, you know, $4, $8 an ounce, in that range, $6 an ounce, I was able to sell it when some of it was like $18, $19 an ounce because it had dropped, and then some of it was down closer to $15 an ounce. But I would have preferred to sell it when it was $40 an ounce, but I needed it. And I had it with me. We always carry stuff like that when we travel. And so I had it with me. We had a blowout on the road. I could just go into a pawn shop in the middle of nowhere, lay down some silver. I've got enough cash to go out and put new tire on the car. And then, you know, a few weeks later, another crisis happens with the car. I go into another place, lay down some more silver, and fix the car. It was that simple.
And just to be clear, you also carry a lot of lead with you, too.
I do.
Anyone's thinking about getting cute.
I have invested extensively in the heavier metals.
Yes. Yeah, I still have some silver. Like, I got into that for a while. And like you said, I just go down to the coin shop, you know, every week on payday. Just buy a coin here, coin there. And for me, it's more of a long-term thing. I had a little fun with it at Porkfest. I took some silver up to Porkfest and, you know, bought a few things with that, and that was kind of neat, you know. But, yeah, it's just a prudent and long-term way to invest.
Yeah, and again, it's, you know, it's just playing around with that stuff is good practice. For us, for my wife and I, we gardened for years, and it was for multiple reasons. First off, you know, home garden stuff is healthier to eat than stuff that you buy that's been processed and everything. And then, in addition to that, it's dramatically cheaper. As long as you're doing it smart, you know, a home garden can be crazy expensive if you're not careful. But if you use your brain a little bit, a home garden can be really cheap. And then also, I kind of was challenged by having a home garden on how much I could learn. So I learned about, you know, insect habitats and good insects and bad insects and how to encourage predator insects and not have to use chemicals to, you know, to fight the bugs that are going to try to eat my squash plants and things like that. And I learned so much about that kind of stuff. And we learned about canning. We were able to, that was a real thing that drew my wife and I together really well. We worked good together canning. And also, you know, I got into winemaking for a while. I probably made, I'm going to conservatively say.
Canning's great. I started looking into that. And it's a intensive process, but once you get going, man, it it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Freeze-drying food, canning, all that stuff. It's fun, too. You know, you learn a lot. You make a few mistakes along the way, but it's fun. You learn, and you got food that'll last.
Yeah, and I started to say, I'm going to say conservatively, I've probably put up, I've probably made in the range of, 100, 120 gallons, maybe more of wine when I was winemaking. Probably nice. More than that. I would say probably more than that. I gave away a bunch of it. The first of it was non-drinkable. It was just garbage. But you try.
I like that stuff.
Yeah. And then by the end, I was making some pretty decent wine. It was actually pretty tasty. And it's a skill, you know, you just work on it. And that's the way with all survival skills or all, you know, maybe it's not survival, maybe it's just preparation, but maybe it's just day-to-day skills that people ought to learn. But it's fun learning that kind of stuff. Keeps your mind active.
It really is. Yeah, like I had a friend, it was kind of funny, we both got each other the same beer making kits for Christmas, like totally unplanned, you know, and we decided to make that beer together, and it was, you know, it was definitely an educational process, especially for me, and it was fun too, you know, the beer was okay, it wasn't anything spectacular, but it was okay, and hey, we made it, so yeah. You know, learn those basic skills. You know, that's the other thing about preparation for whatever, you know, whatever you think's coming down the pike, right? Build your basic skill sets. I mean, can you hold a hammer and a nail? Do you know how to, like, build a basic shelter? Do you know how to identify, like, it's taken me forever. Poison ivy, poison sumac, you know, all those things. You know, how do you identify those and keep away from them? What are edible mushrooms? What aren't? You know, simple stuff like that. Build your skill sets.
Yeah. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends. On the radio, worms.
Meow. Freedom Fiends. All preparation, all the time. you know.
Only that with the truth.
Yeah. It is comforting though to know, hey, if something happens, I've got it covered. I'm going to be fine. There's a level of assurance that comes with knowing, you know, things turn bad, I can clean up my own water. I can, you know, get water from one of these sources, I can clean it, I'll be fine. If something turns bad, I know how to do this, I know how to do that, I know how to set a bone, I know how to make a bandage. You know, there's a real comfort in knowing things like that. And I think that goes back to what I was saying about the Heinz Guderian quote that that really, it's not the situation that's desperate. People get desperate, and you don't have to get desperate. You don't have to panic. You don't have to constantly live in fear. You can do something about it ahead of time, keep the right mindset, and you're going to be fine. I should throw in also a disclaimer on Heinz Guderian. You know, what I found with him, somebody will say, well, Heinz Guderian was just quoting so-and-so. He said that 2 years before or something. Because I always get people correcting me like that. So I should give a disclaimer that almost everything Heinz Guderian came up with, he copied from somebody else, as most geniuses do, you know. So I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't quote that from somebody else.
Well, if you get people correcting you on all that stuff, I don't know. Maybe they have too much time on their hands. Just saying. But no, you know, the whole, wow, I lost my train of thought. I had something perfect to say and I lost it. Let's backtrack. You were talking about preparation.
Yeah, preparation of the mind.
See, it happens to me too. I'm like, I don't know, 10 years younger than you, whatever. And yeah. Anyway, just prepare yourself and build your network, right? One talks about, if things go south, I'll run in the woods and survive on my own. Yeah, you might be able to do that, but would you want to?
Right.
I mean, wouldn't you rather have a really cool, close-knit network of friends and family and associates and acquaintances that you can combine your skill sets with and not be lonely? Like, you know, if things go really south, yeah, I could run in the woods too, but I get really lonely and bored, man. I don't know. I'd like start talking to the squirrels and the pigeons and the turkeys and stuff. I don't think it would work, man. I'd need to have some people around.
You know, a lot of that fear too that we were talking about, that is a staple of the industry and selling you preparation stuff. A lot of that fear is based on this old, worn-out Hobbesian model of where humans are just, glorified apes dragging their knuckles, looking for somebody to eat or kill or attack or whatever. And that's been just completely shown to be wrong. Hobbes was an Englishman, an English philosopher that came up with this nonsense back in the 1700s. And almost everything he said has been proven to be wrong. And so why would you believe Hobbes's description of human nature? Here he was, an elitist English nobleman that lived a sheltered life and never much left that little island he was born on, other than maybe just go across to France and have dinner with somebody or whatever. But he knew nothing about the real life and about how native people interacted with each other and how, you know, whole civilizations exist without law and yet they exist peaceably. He didn't know any of those things. So the fact of the matter is humans do not have a tendency to just revert to complete monsters. The Mad Max scenarios are great for Hollywood, but they don't fit real life. Humans do not behave that way. Humans tend to organize.
Yeah, they're very unrealistic.
Yeah, all those kind of scenarios are. And a lot of the fear.
Well, you have that natural drive to survive, right? And if you can't do it all yourself, which you really, it's difficult, right? So, yeah, you're going to band together with other people. I mean, yeah, like you said, Hollywood makes a good, you know, movie about roving gang. It's all chaos and bad anarchy and destruction, but that's not really how it is. Not even close.
Humans are empathetic animals. We have a tendency to look at not only other humans, but even other animals, and we think, you know, we hate to see suffering. We want to help, even to the point of you know, humans having compassion for animals. We are very compassionate, very empathetic people.
And we will continue that empathy in the next hour after we take a trip to the market. So stay tuned for the Freedom Fiends.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live from the back alleys of a bourbon-filled Babylon. We babysit the binary blip inside your brain with a combination of badinage and technical tabulations, helping to sacralize your senses to the salacious songs of liberty. And I have no idea what that means. I just wrote it one time while I was feeling creative. So, yeah. And with me on the second hour of the Freedom Fiends. Let me see. What's my wrestling name for today? The Jabbering Coon Cat. And with me is Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. How you doing, Ben?
Hey, Chandler. Good to be on the radio with you.
Yeah. So where are you at, man?
We are in the depths of the bayous of southern Alabama, moving around. We're getting ready to move.
I bet it's hot and swampy there.
It's not real bad. There's like a period where you really appreciate the idea of a siesta from about 1 o'clock to about 3 o'clock. But if you stay out of the sun during that time frame, it's really not bad down here. We have a nice onshore breeze, and it's nice.
Oh, that sounds really nice.
We're getting ready.
It's kind of hot and swampy up here.
We're getting ready to shift to a different campground. We've been in one for about 3 months now, and it's kind of we're kind of getting antsy. And we want to shift over to a different one that's a little further away from the coast and a little bit more into the swamps, though, actually. We'll be in an area where alligators are in the campground that we'll be staying in. So that'll be fun.
I was just going to ask if you've seen the gators. You know, it's kind of I've kind of wondered, too, where you guys are traveling and all that. You do stints in different campgrounds. Is it hard to leave after, you know, you've been there for 2 or 3 months and made some connections?
In ways, you know, you get to know people and pretty quickly too. Full-time RVers are extremely friendly people, but you also know that you're probably going to see them at some point in the future, or maybe you're not. But so it's not so bad, you know, breaking out of one and going to another. We've kind of gotten used to the one we're in here now because it is so convenient to so many locations. There's like a half a dozen really good fishing spots right around me in like a semicircle. I can pick, you know, bay fishing, river fishing. It's really nice. And stores are really convenient to where we're at. We're about 20 miles out of the nearest town, but having a good series of stores within 20 miles is handy. But then there's a lot of small mom and pop shops that are right around in this area that are really convenient to get to. So it's
that's what I miss.
Yeah, in that way it's hard to leave where we're at. But where we're going, we also know a lot of the people there and have stayed there, you know, quite a few times. And it's kind of like, it's more like our home campground that we've been to so many times. So it's kind of nice to go back to there too and feel a little bit homey there.
That's awesome. Yeah. Speaking of fishing, I, got dragged kicking and screaming out of my house, 'cause I don't leave my house except for work, you know, but, I got dragged kicking and screaming out to I guess it was a swimming hole and fishing spot or whatever. And I caught my first fish in years.
Oh, you know, really?
It was about a foot-long, cool, wide-mouth bass. I was so impressed. My friend that I went with, she was catching all these little fish, like, constantly. You know, me, I'm old school. Like, I just throw the line in with the hook and nothing on it. And I wasn't catching nothing. She's like, dude, you got to put a worm on. I'm like, nah, I don't need that. You know, and she's reeling in all these sunfish. She caught a little tiny bass. And I'm like, nah, I don't need that. So after a while, we sat there and had a few beers. And I was like, all right, give me one of them worms. And I put a worm on. And sure enough, like 2 minutes later, boom, I was all excited. I was like, cool, I haven't caught a fish in a long time. It was a lot of fun.
Where I'm at down here on the area that I'm in the evening time, if low tide happens right about sunset, it's the perfect time for catching soft shell crab. They come right up to where the water touches the land, and you're going to get your feet wet. But if you have a fine mesh net, you can go along. And they're about sandwich size, you know. They're just about perfect sandwich size, these little soft shell crabs. And you can go along with a 5-gallon bucket and a little hand net. And within just a few minutes, you can get a good amount of soft shell crab, and they're so good.
So, see, to me, like, that's the life, right? You know, in the last hour, we were talking about building your skill set and becoming more self-sufficient and preparing for whatever may come down the pike. And, you know, that's great to go out and do that. Like, you don't even think of it as, like, survivalist, prepare for the worst. You're just like, oh, I'm going to have some fun and catch some crabs, the good kind, and... You know, and oh man, it's so great doing that stuff. You know, like we were sitting there when we were fishing the other day, you know, we were like, well, you know, this is a good thing. I guess if things get really bad, at least in the summertime, we can take our poles out here. We used to, back in the day, we used to build, what do you call them? Worm boxes, I think they're called.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you basically just farm worms, and it's really easy to do. So you get a worm box started, and you start farming all these worms, and you just take them down to the local river, or, you know, there's plenty of ponds. I guess I'm fortunate up in Maine because they're, you know, within driving distance, and if need be, biking distance. That's another thing. I just picked up a bicycle really cheap. Like, there's one thing that the state is good for, right? I figured it out. And every month they have a surplus sale of stuff like that they don't want anymore because they always have to have new and better stuff. And you can find the most interesting things there. And it was 2 months ago I went and I found a 3-speed bicycle with a basket on it and everything. It was great. I love it. You know, like now I haven't ridden a bike in 20 years and now I try to go out, you know, at least 3 or 4 times a week at night. Usually once it starts cooling down, I'll go out for a nice bike ride and everything. It's great. So yeah, you can find all kinds of interesting things at that state sale. I tend to buy a lot of old computers and rebuild them for friends and be like, all right, here's 50, you know, give me 50 bucks. Here's a working computer.
Cool.
So, yeah, but got a new bike, and so yeah, we can go out and just kind of do that. It's a little bit different story in the winter. Like, I don't know, it'd be kind of hard to hunt and fish in the winter. Not impossible. I actually went ice fishing. I've only been once in my life, and it was great. I went to my friend's house, and I went there to sit down and listen to music and consume substances, and he wasn't there, so I sat with his dad and consumed substances, and he said, hey, you ever been ice fishing? And he lived right on a huge lake, and I was like, no man, I've never been. He's like, well, let's ice fish. And this was the ideal way to ice fish. Like, we sat in his living room, and he was one of the first people I knew that had a widescreen TV, like you know, one of them flat screen ones. So we were sitting there watching TV, and he's like, now, just look out that window. He had, like, the sliding glass doors into his back porch. He's like, just look out that window. You see that pole over there? I was like, yep. He's like, if you see a flag go up, tell me, and we'll go out and grab the fish. So we sat there having fun, and, you know, every once in a while, we'd see the flag go up, and we'd run out onto the ice and grab a few little fish. It was great. But I do actually look forward to doing the real ice fishing thing in the shack and all that, you know, just... Make sure you get all the necessary requirements, and it should be fun. But, you know, winter's not all bad. I suppose there's some good points to it.
In ways, I miss winter. You know, I like the cold. I used to ride my motorcycle back and forth to work all winter, and, you know, and it was rough.
Wow.
Cincinnati, Dayton area winters they don't get a lot of snow. You get maybe 4 to 6 inches is a big snowstorm. But they will, yeah. But they will stay down in the, you know, close to zero range. Usually in February, you'll get a couple of weeks where it doesn't come above 10 degrees. And
oh, that, yeah.
And when you're riding 60, 70 miles an hour on a motorcycle, and the temperature is, you know, outside temperature is like 5. The 70-mile-an-hour wind chill is unbearable. It's just, you can't describe it even. So you have to be prepared for it. You have to wear the kind of clothing, you know, gloves and everything. But even at that, I had about a 30-minute commute. And at 30 minutes, even with good equipment, it was penetrating pretty hard at those low temperatures like that. And it was painful. But even then, I enjoyed it. I liked the cold weather. I just didn't like, you know, shoveling the snow and that kind of stuff. That's the part of winter that I hated up there in Ohio.
Well, okay, so like I'm the opposite, right? Like I don't care about snow. Snow is great, whatever. Like there's nothing better than sitting on my back porch, bundled up, of course, in some nice, you know, flannel and wool clothing, sitting out there listening to some tunes and having a couple of drinks or a hot cocoa or even a cup of coffee, whatever, and watching that first or second or third big snowstorm. But it's when you get those zero temps, that's what kills me. Mm. You know, it's kind of funny you were talking about motorcycles, though, because I went to visit one of my really good friends, Chris, that I haven't seen in a long time. And he just bought a really nice new Harley Davidson. Mm. And I saw his old bike in the yard, and I was like, huh, what you doing with that? He's like, well, and he has a Vulcan.
Oh, yeah.
566 cc's, I think. I don't know. It's nice. I was a passenger on it once. And I said, so what you doing with your old bike? And he's like, well, hopefully I'm selling it to you, man. Because he offered to sell it to me for $500, which, man, you know, I never thought about having a motorcycle before. I've always liked bicycles, but I've been kind of sketchy on motorcycles. And I don't know if it's like midlife crisis, but I kind of want one now. So I'm like, all right, man, you just hold on to that motorcycle. I'm going to see if I can save up, you know, $500 and get that thing, because that would be pretty cool. But he told me I need to hurry because his wife wants it out of the yard. So we'll see. I've never driven a motorcycle in my life. Like, I remember I wrote something the other day, one of my I don't know, whatever you call them that I write. But I remember when I was a kid, you know, kind of short, overweight, and awkward and clumsy. And I used to have a grease monkey friend who would build motorbikes, go-karts, everything. Like, you give him some spare parts and he'd build something and we'd drive it. And I remember he had this motorbike and I could not ride this thing for the life of me. I was a daredevil when it comes to bicycles, you know. I'd do anything on a bicycle, but an actual motorbike, I don't know, man, just kind of threw me. So it'll be interesting kind of riding a motorcycle, learning how to do that thing.
More on the Freedom Fiends right after this trip to the market.
Worms. Fishing worms. Give me some night crawlers.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Yes. Worms. Freedom Fiends.
Hey, it's kind of old news now, but I should mention that Bill Buford has a new book out. He sent me a link to it.
I saw that last week.
Yeah, yeah. So get over. Maybe I'll put if I can remember it, I'll put a link in today's show notes. But anything from Bill is good. But it's a collection of his articles that he's done over the last few years. And Bill is just an amazing guy, anyway.
He is. Like, I remember he did a... actually, I believe it was the Pork Fest that I met you. The first one I went to, was it the first? No, it was the second one I went to. And he did like a 4-hour presentation on irregular warfare. And I sat through the whole thing just in awe. I was like, wow, I kind of dig this stuff, man.
He's smart.
I like that.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Entertaining. And you did some pretty good. What was the one? Oh, man. You did two that Red Pill Recordings recorded, and they're on YouTube. The first year saw you. I have both those, like, the videos on my iPod. They're great. I show them to everyone. I make them watch them. I sit down, plug them in. I have a little AV kit that you can plug it into a TV, and I was like, hey, you got to check this guy out, man. He'll set you straight.
Porkfest is a lot of fun. I should probably bring that back up again. I've been trying to figure out a way to get people enthusiastic about having sort of a Porkfest South down here, somewhere in the South, not necessarily Alabama, but somewhere down here. I think Alabama would be good, though, because the Mises Institute is in Alabama. And there's, in northern Florida, there's a pocket of really crazy, radical Bitcoin enthusiasts. And, you know, in Mississippi, there's some good, solid anarchists over there and some Bitcoin enthusiasts. And Louisiana's packed full of them. They're thick over there. North Carolina's not far away, too. And there's a big community of liberty-minded folks in North Carolina. So I really think that there's a way. I just haven't put my finger on exactly how to do it. An easy way, if I had like $2 million laying around to do nothing with, there's a really nice campground I could my hands on for about $2
million. I'll wire that to you after the show. Don't worry about it.
Be sure and use Bitcoin so that the feds can't trace it.
Okay. I'll make sure to get right on that.
But man, it would be a perfect location for that kind of thing because they have this huge field that's like probably, at Porkfest at Rogers Campground, you know, the big field where they put the big tents at for all the activities?
Yep.
Well, there's a field in this campground that's about twice that big, and right in the middle of it, they put a big bonfire, and then there's nothing. It's just this big field. And it would be perfect for just a bunch of radicals to come out and, you know, just dump all over the place and just have a blast. Not really an organized thing like Porkfest, but just more of a, you know, a true anarchist gathering.
Well, I've thought about, like, trying to organize something like that up in Maine, but my organizational skills are subpar. But we could definitely do that up here. Like, there's a guy, and I've never actually been. I almost made it once, but I got detained before I could actually get to the gate. There's a guy up here. His name is Harry Brown. I don't think it's the Harry Brown that ran for president on the Libertarian Party, but maybe it is. I don't know.
I think he died.
But he does like this. Yeah. I don't know. He does like this hemp stock thing, right? And it's a bunch of hippies and activists and whatever. And, you know, they just go and party for the weekend. But there's that. And I think that band. Oh, what's that band that everyone compares to the Dead, but not really?
Fish?
Fish, yes, Fish. Yeah, they did a couple of concerts up in northern Maine, too, that I guess were really cool. And so there's all this real estate up here, and I'm trying to figure out a way, like, if we could just get some of those New Hampshire activists and you know, all throughout New England. And, I mean, who knows, countrywide. But, yeah. I mean, because I think your idea of doing one down south is really good, because at Porkfest, how many people did we have from Florida, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina? You know, people are willing to travel great distances. I would if I could. I can't. I'm lucky that Porkfest is only the next state over.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, it could really work. It totally could.
Yeah, Thunder Dave set up his kitchen for years there at Porkfest, had a big kitchen that he set up. And I don't know if he was there this last year or not, because I wasn't there, but he's right
over. Is that the guy in the big, the guy with the big, truck? Not truck, but, you know, one of them.
The food wagon things?
Yeah, yeah.
No, he just had tents. But he did like a, he always was in the one pot cook-off and made chili and stuff like that. But he's over here in northern Louisiana, so it wouldn't be far for him either.
Nice. Yeah, when we get back, I will briefly tell the story of my experience selling food at Porkfest. I was a little overwhelmed. That's the market for you.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Nightcrawlers.
Freedom Fiends.
So Porkfest, which we should probably explain in case there's people out there in Radio Land that don't know what it is. It's the annual Porcupine Freedom Festival that's held in Lancaster, New Hampshire at Rogers Campground. A gathering of libertarians, minarchists, anarchists, hippies,
gun whatever. Enthusiasts.
Yeah, a lot of gun enthusiasts. which, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, I don't even carry my gun. Like, this past year, I didn't even carry my gun around anymore. Like, I brought it, but I was like, eh, there's enough people. Who needs that?
I'm covered.
So I had this bright idea, you know, free market heaven that Porkfest is. I looked at the girls, my daughter Faith and her girlfriend Sophie, and I said, all right, kids. We went to the dollar store in town, got some poster board markers. I said, I want you guys to make up some really cool signs. I'm going to make breakfast sandwiches for everyone. And me having no business sense, right? I was like, okay, I'm going to charge $1.75 for a breakfast sandwich and 75 cents for a cup of coffee. And I was out there with our wonderful fiend phone programmer, Derek Slopey. He always graciously, him and his wife, Donna, let me camp on their site. They're so awesome. And so we set up a kitchen. I brought all the stuff and we set up a kitchen. The girls made the signs and we posted them all over the campground. So the next morning after a heavy night of consuming libations, I woke up because I'm usually the first person up anyway. I don't sleep very well in the morning. And I start going, looking to make breakfast. And the sign said bacon, egg, and cheese, sausage, egg, and cheese, and ham, egg, and cheese sandwiches for $1.75. Well, guess what? Everyone else was selling those various forms of breakfast sandwiches for like $3 and $4 a piece. I had a line of people waiting, and I was totally unprepared. And this year... of course, like it is every year, the first 4 days were just like mud and rain. So our campsite was all mudded out and, you know, I had to like squish in the mud and threw some boards down. It didn't really do it. So yeah, you know, for the first 2 days, I tried like heck to meet the demand, the market demand of breakfast sandwiches and coffee. And I don't know, it was fun, but I definitely need to plan that a little bit better and set up a little bit larger kitchen. Like Lou's kitchen that he set up the year before was great. If I had something like that, I think I'd be good. But all I had was a griddle and a frying pan and a coffee maker. So I was in a little bit of rough shape. I was not expecting the demand of people just being like, hey, I'll take three sandwiches. Like, oh, okay, I'll get right on that. No, it was a lot of fun, though. You know, I probably made money. I don't know. I just like threw it all in a pile and it's like, all right, this is our food money and liquor money for the rest of the week. But whatever. I like cooking, though. You know, I liked cooking. I think Joe and Nicole were next to us and they came over and bought a few sandwiches and a couple other people. You know, so, and Diana and Christian were across from us. And yeah, it was cool, man. I was like, all right, let's cook up some breakfast. Let's do it up. So. A lot of entrepreneurial opportunities at Porkfest, let me just say.
There really are. That's one of the main things about Porkfest, that it is just a giant... Well, they have an area called the Agora Valley, where it's just all merchandise of different kinds and food and just, you know, massages, chiropractic, almost anything you can imagine is right there in Agora Valley. And then you don't have, you know.
And what happens when local state revenuers come in to try to like perpetrate their shenanigans?
Yeah, and that video is floating around somewhere of that incident.
Yeah, I was so disappointed. Like, that happened the day before I got there, and I was like, oh, man, I really wish I could have been there. I would have had so much fun. So much fun. But it was not meant to be.
My daughter, Kai, goes around the country to these different Renaissance festivals, and she moves around the country like my wife and I do, except far more active at moving than we are. We have a tendency to kind of stay in the same areas. But she goes from area to area. She was way out in Colorado and then down in Arizona and off in Texas and up in Oklahoma, and now she's headed to North Carolina. But she's staying with us for a couple weeks in between shows just to visit and stuff. And she tells about some of her adventures and everything. And there's a place in Texas that they refer to as Toontown. And Toontown is made up of a bunch of Renaissance Festival workers who are either taking a break or... you know, that kind of thing. Not actively working at the time. Sometimes there's a health issue and they just want to take a break from the road. Maybe there's young children and they want to take a break from the road. But Toontown is this area in Texas where a lot of Renaissance Festival workers have sort of migrated to on a temporarily permanent basis. And there's also a lot of hippies there. There's anarchists there. And it's a no-cop zone. Everybody kind of knows it's a no-cop
zone. Yay!
And we were talking about that, and there's another one like that out in California. Its name escapes me, but it's I think it's called something like Concrete City or something like that. It's based on – it's an old Air Force base from World War II that's been abandoned. So there's these big, huge, flat slabs of concrete, and people pitch their tents and park their motorhomes, and it's a giant anarchist village. Not a commune. It's not a communist anarchist thing. It's just there's no government. They organize themselves. They keep the peace. There's, you know, there's not crime like you think of crime, but there's things that are forbidden by the authorities, but they're not crime. There's no victims. And these things exist in a semi-permanent place in several places. And Porkfest is kind of like a calm version of that pops up for a week, and then everybody cleans it all up, and they go back home again. But I would kind of like to see those others. I'd like to go see Toontown in Texas and see what that place is like.
I'm sorry, Toontown? All I can think of is Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I think that's where they got the name of it, because it's kind of like in Roger Rabbit, Toontown was its own separate little world inside of L.A., where all kinds of weird things took place. There was different laws of physics in Toontown, and I think that's what they were shooting for in Texas Toontown too.
Well, I could definitely deal with that, and I think honestly, like that's kind of the natural state of things, right? Like in the absence of an oppressive authority system, people organize themselves to mutual benefit, and I don't know. That's kind of what you see, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, you take Porkfest or these other gatherings as a microcosm, but think about your small towns out in rural communities, right? You know, you may have a sheriff, but chances are the sheriff knows everyone in the town, and you're kind of all on a first name basis, and, you know, you go to Mabel's farm to get your eggs and, you know, whatever. I think, like, that is very beneficial, and that's what we need to start. Well, not, I don't want to sound collectivist, but that would be very beneficial for people in those local communities to encourage that and help foster it. I think it would work out to their benefit.
Yeah,
you know, instead of depending on City Hall or DOT or Walmart or, you know, whatever.
You know, and I think also, and this goes back to some of the Wall Street shenanigans that we were talking about in the first hour, I think if people were less inclined to invest their money in Wall Street or in some Chinese, you know, investment or investing their money in some kind of corporation or whatever, if they were more interested in what they can do in their own community, among their own family, and among their own relatives and their own neighbors, you know, that money, maybe it's not going to turn the kind of investment that it would turn if you put it into the, you know, into something Wall Street related. But on the other hand, I think the return is more than just the, you know, what it turns out to be in your bank account. I think there's a
bigger reward. More personal, right? You can see the benefits of your investment firsthand in a shorter span of time, right? You know, if you're investing in a local cooperative farm, which is not communist, you know, a local cooperative,
right?
You can see that investment. Like I know in Maine, I don't remember the name of the program, but you can invest a certain amount of money in, you can pick a local farm and you invest a certain amount of money and you get a certain amount of crops at certain points in time throughout the summer, the you know, the peak growing season. And, you know, you get all kinds of like fresh vegetables, and I think you could even do meat and eggs and all that stuff. And it's, I don't know, it's much more personal and immediate, right? And I like that. I think that that, you know, in the city, I understand it's a harder thing to do in like big urban areas. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible. It can be done. You know, you talk about rooftop gardening and all that. That's a whole other area we can go into. But, you know, more sparsely populated communities, this is a situation where you can take advantage of, and you can see those results firsthand and develop meaningful connections, relationships, whatever you want to call it, that will extend into the future and will benefit you, you know? Maybe you don't know how to garden and you start, you know, investing in this and you get curious about where your investment's going. You start talking to, you know, your local farmers and you might pick up a few skills and learn a thing or two.
You know, I knew some people in that were in the Washington, D.C. area, and this situation no longer exists. So any cops who decide they want to go and try to find somebody, you're not going to be able to find them because they're not there anymore. But for quite a bit of time, these people in the Washington, D.C. area would drive off into Virginia to farms that they had invested in, just like what you described. And they would load up stuff like fresh, unprocessed butter, fresh milk, you know, unprocessed milk, fresh other products from the farms. And they would drive it into Washington, D.C. And they had drop points. And it was just like, I mean, I hate to say it, but it was just like drug dealing. You have suppliers.
Drops.
Yeah. You have transport and you have drops and you have pickups for money. And they made a pretty good business out of just moving fresh farm goods under the wire without inspections, without permission, into Washington, D.C. so that people could get good, honest, fresh food. Rather than that processed
healthy garbage. Food.
Yeah. So it's opportunities. Yeah. You just have to look for it.
Worms.
Agorism. Worms.
Agorism is good.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, there's some Squisscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons. And you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks, you can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Worms of Liberty.
On the Freedom
Into Fiends. Your brain. Yes.
Yeah, so what were we talking about?
How awesome free markets are.
Yeah.
And cooperatives. Voluntary transactions between individuals.
Yeah. And food trucks are one of my favorite things. There's more and more people are developing food trucks and not asking permission. Just going and doing it, and then when the authorities start getting all authoritarian, they just move to a different place and do it someplace else.
Well, that's what you got to do, right? I mean, it's kind of sad that trafficking in healthy foods has become like trafficking in illicit drugs, but it really has.
Yeah.
But who cares, right? You know, there's a demand for it, and it's a good thing. So that demand will be met.
And more people
are willing to take that risk.
More and more people are getting, like there's things like phone apps and stuff to tell you where food trucks are appearing. And, you know, I was looking at some crackdowns that some of the, especially in California, that some of the government thugs have been doing with people who are like just, you know, selling oranges beside the road or whatever. And these great heroes are out there arresting these poor guys that are just trying to make a living. And you know it's so negative. It wants to drag you down, and you think, oh man, how can a moral person?
It makes me want to break the non-aggression principle.
Oh, it does. Yeah,
when I see these people doing that, I just want to like punch them in the face.
Yeah,
stop that. Knock it off. Leave those people alone.
But what kind of a twisted, you know, mentality causes a person to think that just because they have a uniform that they have the right to go and interrupt with somebody who's just making their living selling oranges beside the road or just, you know, selling something else beside the highway. Just, they're not hurting anybody. If you don't want to buy their stuff, don't stop. You know, it's that simple. And yet, these twisted, mentally deficient individuals that think that just because they have a uniform, they have the right to go and interrupt somebody's living. It's just disgusting. But, you know, the good part...
Well, they're told to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, they were, for all the Christians listening, those Roman soldiers pounding nails through Jesus' wrists were just following orders, and they were obeying the law. So, yeah, you know,
yeah,
heroes. But trying not to go negative.
But it's just frustrating, right? You know, you see honest people, like, I mean, I'll be honest, like, I don't even have a problem if you're selling drugs, right? Because if there's a market demand and you're honest about it, then that's your perspective or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, personally, I don't engage in that sort of activity. I don't do drugs. I think they're harmful to the body and soul.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you like that sort of thing, I think you should be able to engage in those voluntary transactions. But... you know, we're not even talking about drugs. We're talking about food. And like, one of the things that always bugs me is you see, like, the hippies making necklaces and jewelry and stuff. I have a lot of friends that do that sort of thing. And I need a permit to sell my wares to people. You know, it irritates me to no end that these people have to try to insert themselves into an A-B transaction.
Right. Yeah, they've got no business in it. If you want that and you are willing to pay for it, then you buy it, and it's just between the two people. There's no right. There's no rightful way to interfere in a transaction between two adults who are just selling a product back and forth between each other. Everything's voluntary. Nobody with a uniform has any right to go in there and interfere with that. And that's, you know, but the thing of it is with the markets are so powerful and so fluid and so adjustable.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, fluid.
That they are just going to find a way to get around every one of those uniformed goons, no matter how many the government pushes out there, no matter how many badges the government pumps out. There's going to be, you know, water's going to seek its way to the sea. It always has, it always will, and you can't stop it.
The spice must flow, or cats must flow, whichever cat, one.
Cats must flow. Hey, Chandler.
My cat's about ready to flow, too.
Always great to do a show with you, dude.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really enjoy it. You enlighten me. Well, you folks out there in radio land and podcast land and internet land, take care of yourselves and take care of each other, because that's what it's all about.
Word.
We'll talk to you soon.
Word.